It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe that Thanksgiving has come and gone. This year has really flown by. Also, want to give a big shout-out to my friends at the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. We had an awesome Granite State baseball dinner on Saturday, November 18th, sold out. And it really had a theme of 1975, because many of the esteemed ex-players were involved with the 1975 World Series. We had Tony Perez, who hit the Game 7 home run off of Bill Lee, and Bill Spaceman Lee was there as well. And Bernie Carbo was there, and of course, Bernie... People don't remember this, but Carlton Fisk, everybody remembers his home run when he is waving at fair in left field foul pole. But prior to that, Bernie Carbo had hit a three-run home run that without that home run, then Carlton Fisk's home run wouldn't have mattered or would never have occurred. And we also, of course, had Rico Petrocelli, who played in the 1975 World Series. And, of course, the usual luminary Chris Carpenter, who's made a point to make that dinner every year. And we raised over $100,000 for CHAD, the Ted Williams Baseball Foundation, as well as the New Hampshire Foundation. And the baseball dinner has a long history. It really began way back when I was a kid growing up in Massachusetts. Then it was called the New Hampshire Baseball Dinner. It lied dormant for many years, and then when the Fisher Cats came to town, they reinvigorated it and rejuvenated it, and it's now known as the Granite State Baseball Dinner. So with that theme of history, this weekend, it's so relevant that I have Bill Dunlap, who is the president of the New Hampshire Historical Society, with me this weekend. Bill, thank you for joining me. I know you're a busy guy, so I appreciate you spending the 25th with me, and thank you.
Happy to be here. And by the way, you just I have a little PTSD about that Perez home run from
me too,
1975, and then that gets me thinking about the Mets series.
86.
It was even worse.
So the long-suffering, people like Bill and Ken Kale and myself, we remember, 67 World Series, the St. Louis Cardinals were a better team, and Game 7, Longborg pitched on 2 days rest, and we lost 7-2. So I think that was okay, losing in seven games. But in 75 World Series, we should have won games. We won Game 6. We should have won Game 7. We also should have won Game 2. People don't remember that, but the first two games were at Fenway. We won the first game. Second game, we had a one-run lead going into the last inning, and then they tied it up, and then we ended up losing, and blah, blah, blah. But you're right, the lollipop curve that Spaceman threw up to Tony Perez, that was the end of that. And then, of course, Jim Willoughby's pitching lights out. I don't know if you remember that. And Darryl Johnson takes him out for a pinch hitter. Cecil Cooper, who had been a huge slump.
Yep.
And then brought in Jim Burton. That was the end of that. And, of course, 86, we were two runs ahead in Game 6 against the Mets. Two strikes on Gary Carter. Nobody on and two outs and two strikes. And we ended up blowing that game. And, of course, people don't remember, but Game 7 was then rained out the next day. So we had a little bit of a time lapse. And then in Game 7, we had a 2-0 lead with Bruce Hurst. We didn't win that. But it's all people forgotten, Bill, because we won in 2004, the Red Sox, 2004, 7, and 13.
Just one other thing on this baseball theme. I was actually at the 67 World Series 7th game.
Wow. 7-2, right? I think.
67,
but it was 7.
Bob Gibson was absolutely untouchable.
It was
amazing. So I was a fairly young kid then, but it was a big thrill to be there.
And I was to get into the World Series. The Red Sox had to win the last two regular season games against Minnesota. So earlier in the season, I was 10 years old myself, and I said to my dad, it seemed like the Red Sox, they had been horrible the year before and like half game out of last place, et cetera. I said, but they were looking good. I said, would you mind getting tickets to the last two games of the season? So my dad did, and then they won those two games, and Carl Yastrzemski went 7-for-8, and then, of course, the Detroit Tigers had to lose their game, and they did, and then we went to the World Series because the listening audience may not remember this, but essentially there were only two leagues. There was the American League, there were National League, there were not multiple playoff teams, and so if you won the pennant, it was in the 10-team league, you went right to the World Series, you know. Literally a day later. So anyway, that's baseball history. But I'm not with Ken Burns. I'm with Bill Dunlap. And I'm telling you, Bill, one of my favorite expressions is, One man's junk is another man's treasure,
right,
in terms of history.
Right.
So tell us what's going on with the New Hampshire Historical Society. I know you've got a lot of initiatives going on.
Sure.
You've done a great job. I've known you many years before you were at the New Hampshire Historical Society, and it's great to see that you've been there so many years. So what's the latest?
Well, you mentioned, one person's junk is another person's treasure or whatever. The New Hampshire Historical Society has a huge collection. We have over 2 million pages of manuscripts, documents that go all the way back. Some of the really great ones are letters written by George Washington himself in his own hand to General Stark of New Hampshire during the Revolution, and on and on it goes. We have about 33,000 objects in the collection, 250,000 photographs, historic photographs that are really interesting to look at. Towns from all around New Hampshire are documented in those. About 800,000 pages of newspapers. So we've got a lot of stuff to take care of at the society.
So how do you do that? I know you have a green initiative.
Yes.
And I know you're trying to categorize things electronically,
mm-hmm.
but there also must be still a certain amount of hard copy. So how does that work? And tell me about the green initiative.
Sure. So, to go to our facilities, because for a historical society, our buildings are important because of these huge collections. You've got to have a place to store them, and you've got to have the right kind of climate control and environment. You can't have too much humidity. You've got to regulate your relative humidity, your temperature. You don't want a lot of UV light coming into the building and baking the collections. So we had a successful capital campaign a handful of years ago, and one of the major things was to green our main building, which is the building that a lot of people know adjacent to the State House in Concord. And this is a National Register listed building. It's a historic building that's one of the premier examples of a small public building in the whole country. The architect was Guy Lowell, who had just designed the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston right before he did this building. So it's a really significant building, but it was an energy disaster. We have about 40% of the roof area of that building is glass because of skylights. So we were leaking heat in the winter and in air conditioning in the summer. So we had to figure out a way to try to green those or treat those skylights to stop losing all this heat and cooling. And so we went through a long process and ended up with a really ingenious solution using some experts from around the country to put energy-efficient barriers above the skylights. They're not visible from the exterior. And then we imitate natural light with LED lighting. So it looks absolutely the same as it did before, when it was all natural light. We also converted an antiquated heating system to a high-tech, current system. And we took our energy bill from over $100,000 a year to about $35,000 for the building, and we cut our carbon footprint by 75%, which is amazing. We went from 220 tons of carbon to 50 tons.
Oh, so the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
More economical from a financial perspective and better for Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go to break, though, let's get the membership information out. I know that, obviously the New Hampshire Historical Society, is self-sustaining. I know you rely on members. So let's mm-hmm. get that contact information out there.
Sure. We have a great website, just nhhistory.org. If you just Google New Hampshire History, we'll come up. And we rely on our members, as you just indicated. We're a private nonprofit. We get no state funding. So membership dues, they start at $50 a year. It helps support our work. We have an annual fund. We have an endowment. So we're kind of a traditional nonprofit, but we rely on the generosity of the citizens in New Hampshire. And a lot of people, actually about 20% of our members are from beyond the borders of New Hampshire, people who maybe have a connection to the state. So nhhistory.org is the place to go. And even if you don't join us, we hope you do, but the website itself is really interesting to look at.
Awesome. And what have you? I mean, we just had Thanksgiving. So what are the normal hours though? Monday through Friday.
So we have a museum gallery in the building adjacent to the State House at 30 Park Street, Concord, and it's open Tuesday through Saturday from 9:30 to 5. Except, maybe there's a rare holiday when we might not be open, like Thanksgiving Day. But in general, Tuesday through Saturday, 9:30 to 5.
You have a new White Mountain Art Gallery. Tell us about that.
Yeah. As another part of this capital campaign, in addition to greening the building, we wanted to create some additional gallery space to exhibit our collection of White Mountain art. And for some of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with White Mountain Art. It's a sort of a school of art, they call it. And we have one of the top collections anywhere in the country of White Mountain Art, just beautiful, spectacular scenes of the North Country of New Hampshire and the whites. And so we got a donor, lead donor Andy McLean, who is a cousin of the Concord McLean family, but he's a Massachusetts cousin, who's a White Mountain Art enthusiast. And he gave us a very significant gift to allow us to build out new gallery space in our building. So we have this wonderful McLean Gallery that's dedicated to White Mountain Art.
So would you tee up the exciting new initiative that I know I'm familiar with because we've met on it,
mm-hmm.
called the Democracy Project, Renewing History in the Civics in New Hampshire Schools. And, of course, you also, you know, presented at the State Board of Ed and mm-hmm. basically the sort of the reality that young students aren't really as engaged in civics and history as much as they had been in the past. So tell us, tee that up for me, and we'll explore it after break.
Sure. So this is a project the society is doing. We've got a big stake in education, traditionally in New Hampshire. We see between 10 and 15,000 school kids a year who come to our program. Either they visit us or we go into the classroom. And we've been witnessing in the last few years a rapid decline, an alarming decline in the kids' knowledge of history and civics and kind of how our American system works. And so we began meeting with other nonprofit groups to talk about how we could try to work to counteract this trend, because it's a major problem for our country, basically, if we don't have people coming out of our educational system that understand how our system works. So that's the project. That's the sort of antecedent of the project.
Perfect. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio, and this weekend, November 25th and 26th, depending on when you're listening to this, is featuring the New Hampshire Historical Society with its president, Bill Dunlap, who I've known for many years. We were sort of kibitzing about the baseball, you know, earlier. So we want to talk a little bit further about the Democracy Project and why that is so important. But before I do, I just want to give a big shout out to all my running friends who participated first in the Manchester Half and Full Marathon a couple weekends ago, and then last weekend was the Wolf Hollow Half Marathon in Nashua. So it's great to see so many of my running friends out there. Many of the races that we do, like the Penman 5K, you know, raise money for Veterans Count. And last weekend's show, we had Renee from Veterans Count on. Of course, the more we can do for our veterans, the better. We've put on a special day of dental care down at Easter Seals Dental Center on November 10th. We learned that many veterans get rejected when they go to the VA for dental, like 90% of the time, and it has nothing to do with the people at VA. It's just the congressional rule. So a lot of veterans are in need of oral care, so we set up a special day at the Easter Seals Dental Center. So a big shout-out to all of our veterans. So, Bill, give us the contact information again from the New Hampshire Historical Society, and then we'll get to the Democracy Project.
Sure. Our website is nhhistory.org, and we've got a terrific website. It's got a lot of our collections been digitized and is available there, so you can spend hours browsing our site. But that's where to go to learn about how to become a member of the society.
Awesome. So a couple of years ago, when I was chair of the State Board of Education, you and a colleague presented sort of the stark reality that mm-hmm. for years, you know, when the students have come in, you know, your colleagues who would be, you know, presenting to the students would ask basic questions to engage the students, and it's evolved so where you can't even ask the basic questions because you get the sort of Ferris Bueller day off look at that point. And of course, that's anecdotal, empirical, but you know, we know that there's definitely a decline in history mm-hmm. and civics knowledge. So tell us, I know Justice Souter is involved. How did the whole thing come together?
Well, so as you mentioned, Justice David Souter, New Hampshire's own, who happens to be a trustee of the New Hampshire Historical Society, has been sounding the alarm for a lot of years that there's an erosion of understanding of U.S. history and civics. And I'd been hearing it from him myself. And I knew it was a problem, but what my sort of canary in the coal mine moment was a year ago, our director of education came to me and said, our teachers, we have six museum teachers who deliver the program to the roughly 10,000 school kids per year that we see. They came to our director of education and said, we have to drop one of our programs that deals with New Hampshire in the American Revolution, Civil War, and World War II. It's a quick sort of scan of those three major wars, because in the last two or three years, the kids coming to us do not know what the American Revolution was. They don't know that we fought the British. They literally know nothing about it. So I knew things were getting bad, but I really had no idea it was that bad. So that kind of galvanized us to start looking more intensely at it. We've met with some other nonprofits. The New Hampshire Bar Association and the New Hampshire Bar Foundation are very concerned about this issue. And they see it because they're in courtrooms around the state. And if people don't understand how the system works, that affects our whole legal system. So they're interested, and they're going to partner with us on this initiative we named the Democracy Project, as you mentioned a minute ago, renewing history and civics in New Hampshire schools. And it's a three-pronged project. The first thing is to develop a new history curriculum for K through 5 years. There are some good curricula for middle school and high school already available, but the New Hampshire curriculum, which is done in the fourth grade traditionally, is a good sort of springboard to American history and getting the kids started. And the problem is, if you just don't do anything in those early years and then you try to sort of graft a civics course onto kids when they're in 10th graders, it just doesn't work very well. So you really need that foundation in the early years. We did a really terrific curriculum in the 90s, but it needs updating. And so we're spending a lot of effort on developing a new curriculum that will be delivered through the web and made available free of charge to school districts around the state. That's step one. Second prong of this offensive is to provide teacher training for teachers, summer continuing ed programs, and we'll do it during the school year as well. To get teachers trained up. We're actually discovering that a lot of the newer teachers haven't had social studies since they were elementary school students themselves. So we need work there, too.
So the teachers aren't even one chapter ahead of the class in that case.
Right. Okay. And by the way, I want to say this right now. We are not blaming the teachers at all in this whole thing. They are subject to a lot of forces. What's happened is all the programs like No Child Left Behind, Common Core, the various all well-intentioned initiatives have caused kind of a crowding out of other things, and social studies has been one of the things crowded out. So.
Exactly. It's good that you have an organization like the New Hampshire Historical Society willing, you know, to help develop the curriculum. And, of course, as you know, Bill, the timing is quite good because we're the minimum history standards are being reviewed, you know,
exactly.
by the state board and the Department of Ed. So this is great timing, and if you can provide that curriculum from K through 5, I'm sure that'll be a welcome addition to the process.
Mm-hmm. So curriculum development, as we've been talking about, is one key thing. Providing some additional teacher training is a second thing. And the third piece is kind of advocacy at the local level, the community level. And we're going to partner with the New Hampshire Bar Foundation. Some of their members want to help as volunteers to talk to local superintendents, curriculum coordinators, school boards, to just let them know that we have an issue on our hands. We're offering part of the solution with a really terrific new curriculum that will be available through the web, and asking them to think about ways to reintroduce social studies, give it a little more kind of shelf space, so to speak, in the school day. So it's a three-pronged effort, and we're in the midst of fundraising for this project. We need to raise about $1.2 million. That's a lot of money to raise. We're off to a good start. We've had a number of foundations and companies that have, you know, when people look at this issue, if they're able to contribute, in many, many cases, they say, yeah, we want to contribute because it's such an important thing.
It's so compelling. And you already have a steering committee, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We have a steering committee for this that includes superintendents of schools, citizens from around the state, some trustees of the New Hampshire Historical Society,
And yours truly, right?
And Tom, we twisted Tom's arm, actually, and he agreed to join the group.
Actually, Bill and Jack Crisp did not have to twist my arm because I always was pretty familiar with it with my work, and definitely want to get involved. So, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's mm-hmm. talk about you've got done, and I'm curious myself to understand how this works. So, on Thursday, November 30th, you have something at the Wolfboro Public Library called the Geniality of Research of the New Hampshire Historical Society. So do you take the show on the road then? Is that what's
yes?
Going?
We offer a lot of public programs, and there are a lot of genealogy is a really sort of hot topic for some people. I mean, more and more people are interested in researching family history. So we offer genealogy workshops at the New Hampshire Historical Society here in Concord, but we also occasionally go out to other places. And Wolfboro contacted us and said, we'd love to host one up here. And so we're, as you say, bringing the show on the road. We have expert genealogists to help people, learn how to do that.
And that's on next Thursday, November 30th at the Wolfboro Public Library, 259 South Main Street. And then you have using DNA and family history research, and that's way into the new year, but Saturday, January 20th. Tell us mm-hmm. about that.
You know, I don't know a lot about it because the experts on our staff understand it. So the most I know about it is my wife and I sent away for one of those DNA analyses to figure out ethnic.
I did that too, and my father was adopted, so I had no idea, what I was. So I was just a huge mixed bag. It was interesting, but that is on January 20th, 2018, and basically, if you call Wendy at 856-0621, 856-0621, you can get that information. So as you look at your long tenure now with the New Hampshire mm-hmm. Historical Society, obviously with technology, you're dealing with better storage and so on and so forth, and of course the whole civics thing. But if you kind of look at the past 10 years, what do you see as your major accomplishment and what's a challenge ahead?
Well, so you gave me credit for 10 years. It's actually almost 8, so not quite 10.
Well, I'm rounding up,
Yeah, right. And I've really enjoyed working at the New Hampshire Historical Society. It's one of the kind of foundational nonprofits in the state. I mean, we've been around since 1823, so one of the very oldest ones. And it's a real honor and privilege to kind of be entrusted with a place like that, with the stewardship of it, which is kind of my job. So I think our big accomplishment since I've been there is to kind of think about our facilities and how to better use them. We talked about greening our main building. We also took some additional, we have a couple other buildings we own in Eagle Square in Concord where we have collection storage and curatorial offices, and we've converted some space in one of those buildings to commercial rental property. We have a very terrific high-end tenant in one of those, and that creates income for us because thinking about your financial sustainability for a nonprofit is always important, and we're on a very solid foundation at the society.
Awesome to hear, and of course that's your history as being involved with other not-for-profits, but as you and I used to say to many organizations, no money, no mission, whether it's the Bridges
right.
House, whatever. So
right.
nhhistory.org, Bill Dunlop, thanks for a great 8 years and I hope for another terrific additional 8 years. Thank you for joining me this weekend.
Thank you.
Tom Raffio will return next weekend with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.